I had sent out this poem to this Sangha, and actually also to the Great Spirit Sangha, but I really wanted to talk about it a little bit, particularly in light of starting a new cycle of something or other, artificial though that a whole calendar may be. This is I love this poem by Lucille Clifton. So I'll just read it and then share with you some thoughts that I have about it from the perspective of recovery and practice. I am running into a new year, and the old years blow back like a wind that I catch in my hair, like strong fingers, like all my old promises. And it will be hard to let go of what I said to myself about myself when I was 16 and 26 and 36, even 36. But I am running into a new year, and I beg what I love and I leave to forgive me. And I would add maybe even 66. I don't think it's a process that necessarily gets resolved after you turn 36. So I started to think about this whole idea of forgiveness and the importance of self-forgiveness and the role that it plays in really our own growth, our development, the transformation for me of my suffering, and just also the opportunity that self-forgiveness offers, I think, to have a sense that I can begin anew, right? And kind of get unstuck from a lot of painful cycles about ideas and feelings that I've had about myself and my life and how I've lived over the years. I think that forgiveness, particularly for ourselves, can be one of the biggest and most challenging tasks. And I don't know if that's particularly just a phenomenon that's a little more acute of a challenge, if you will, for women or for people in recovery. But for me, it was quite a challenging process, and it's a little it's present for me because on my trip to New York last week, I actually found myself in a situation where I did something that wasn't terribly egregious, but nonetheless was kind of a violation of how I like to live my life. I've privileged my own feelings and experience over staying with some people and staying in connection with them, which is one of my vows as an ordained priest. So it was interesting to feel all of the things that came up in terms of my judgment and my criticism, and then just to watch myself actually kind of go through the process, how physical it was for me, you know, to have a shot of adrenaline, of huge self-criticism and kind of embarrassment. And then to kind of feel that for a couple of days and to feel, just observe in a more neutral way how long it took for that process to kind of run its cycle. And then what I needed to do internally and externally in order to facilitate the process of self-forgiveness. So that I think also that in combination with this poem has made this topic of self-forgiveness kind of interesting to me, in tandem with the fact that, you know, we're starting this new calendar year and it's an opportunity to begin anew. Pema Chodron, who's one of my favorite teachers, says, forgiveness, it seems, cannot be forced. When we are brave enough to open our hearts to ourselves, however, forgiveness will emerge. There's a simple practice we can do to cultivate forgiveness. First, we acknowledge what we feel, shame, revenge, embarrassment, remorse. Then we forgive ourselves for being human. Then, in the spirit of not wallowing in the pain, we let go and make a fresh start. We don't have to carry the burden with us anymore. We can acknowledge, forgive, and start anew. If we practice this way, little by little, we'll learn to abide with the feeling of regret for having hurt ourselves and others. We will also learn self-forgiveness. Eventually, at our own speed, we will even find our capacity to forgive those who have done us harm. We will discover forgiveness as a natural expression of the open heart, an expression of our basic goodness. This potential is inherent in every moment. Each moment is an opportunity to make a fresh start. And that's from the places that scare you. For me, part of this whole process comes also not just from my AA work and Buddhist practice, but also from ACA work. And I think that there is something going back to this that I wanted to share. You know, if you're familiar with the document, The 14 Characteristics of Adult Children of Alcoholics, the 11th trait in that very useful PDF is that we judge ourselves harshly and have a very low sense of self-esteem. We judge ourselves without mercy. And while that is not quite as operative for me as it was when I was earlier in my practice and in my recovery, it doesn't take much for me to remember how excruciating it was to not have any mercy for myself. And it was at times just intolerable to be in my own skin with all of the judgment that I had about myself and how I wasn't doing something right, or I did something wrong, or I wasn't doing enough. It was just extremely, extremely painful. So I think that there is a process that is helpful in terms of self-forgiveness. I mean, it's not like, you know, kind of like for many years, letting go just used to annoy me so much, hearing that in recovery. Just let go, you know, like it's a light switch I can flick on or off, like it's a simple process. And I think self-forgiveness kind of falls in that same category. It's a challenging process, and it takes a lot of dedication and long, hard work to we get to that point where we, for me, I radically befriended myself, which is another phrase that Pema uses, the importance of radically befriending ourselves. And it really was a quite a long process to come to the point where, you know, I realized that part of the reason why I was so harsh and unforgiving with others was because, guess what? Hold for it. Hold for the newsflash. I was extremely harsh and unforgiving with myself. And I wasn't even aware. I wasn't even aware of how harsh and unforgiving I was. You know, I think, and I often, for me, the process was like tuning into this low-level radio station, if that's not an antiquated analogy, that just runs 24/7. That's all about self-judgment and self-criticism. That's kind of the person that stands outside of me always judging, you know, did I do that right? Could I have done it better? You know, all of that. And it took me a long time to realize that I needed to actually tune into that station, to realize that it was 24/7, and to realize the nature of the words that I used for myself and toward myself, and the harshness, the tone that I was taking with myself. So the first step, I think, from both a recovery and a practice perspective, therapeutic perspective as well, is really recognizing and acknowledging, you know, that this type of a paradigm is going on in ourselves, right? And for me, as I said, the most dramatically helpful thing was to start to really listen to that conversation that, you know, otherwise I was so busy that and it was so subtle, but so persistent that I didn't even know that it was, it was a station I was tuned into. So this is very much like basic recovery, right? Like basic Buddhism. Step one, we wake up. we wake up to our situation. We admit that we're suffering from our substances, drinking, eating, sexing, whatever. In Buddhist practice, we wake up to the fact that in some fashion we are suffering. And I think that that's the beginning of self-forgiveness as well, to wake up to the fact that we're suffering as a result of not forgiving ourselves. And actually, you know, I've always thought that all of these processes are rather homeopathic in the sense that, you know, we have to take some of the further experience, some of the difficulty in order to get to that which is healing and that which is curative. And this is, you know, in practice, this is coming into a tangible relationship and understanding and experience of mindfulness. And sometimes mindfulness, especially at the beginning of any process, just like recovery, is not always comfortable. When I woke up to my own addictions, it's like, oh my God, yeah, I'm a flat out horrifying alcoholic and pothead. And oh, look at the mess that I am making in my life and how I'm harming myself and harming other people. So this waking up and this healing, it takes some persistence and it takes some kindness and compassion toward ourselves in those early stages where we're confronted with, oh, this is really hard, this reality. But there is no way to further the path. One of the things that Thich Nhat Hanh has said in a book that I frequently teach from is that awareness is the beginning of all healing. Healing cannot happen. True healing cannot happen without awareness. So we come into some recognition. And again, I think that this is akin to coming into step one or waking up to any type of our suffering. And then the next thing is to actually feel all of that experience, which is usually very complex. And for me, having been a fairly narrow emotional channel, takes a while to cultivate the ability to feel the full richness, complexity, multifaceted nature of how it's working and how it operates in me and how it manifests in others. But to start to feel the impact of all of this. And for me, you know, it's like, I think it's a little bit easier for me to feel regret toward when I harm others as opposed to when I harm myself. But that is also the invitation here in the self-forgiveness, to really feel the regret for the ways that we have harmed ourselves. But feeling that regret or feeling the full sense of remorse actually has a way of increasing our capacity, deepening our actual experience of and strengthening our resolve. In his book on the precepts, Reb Anderson talks about this in the context of right speech, and he talks about the etymology of the word remorse, and that it is to taste again the bitterness of our actions. And I think that this, while that may be a little dramatic, this sense of regret and feeling the regret or feeling the implications of not forgiving ourselves, right? Of being withholding from ourselves, of being withholding of kindness and generosity, actually helps to sink into it as opposed to just gloss over it and to minimize the impact that it has, right? The third aspect of self-forgiveness is to actually start to engage in some sort of remedial activity, some sort of healing. You know, we do this in the process of our steps when we are making amends, right? We go through the fourth step. We can share our experiences with somebody else, perhaps confess. And we start to embody virtuous and upright action. I mean, it took me many years to figure out that the steps are actually an extraordinary methodology for helping all of us to become ethical, upright human beings, to give us the tools and to actually learn how to be in alignment more and more of the time with our true selves, as opposed to, that self which is distorted as a result of coming out of addictive behavior or unaware behavior. That type of kind of twisted beingness that certainly I had before I came into recovery and practice that was distorted, but also did nothing but harm to myself and others in one fashion or another. And this remedial action, like when we get to step 8 and 9 and we get ready, or 10 on an ongoing basis, this making amends, to mend, to actually mend things together, to mend our lives together, to mend our relationship with ourselves, is a lot of what we're doing, particularly in the realm of self forgiveness. It took me, it was, I think I probably was, I want to say maybe somewhere like around 15 years of recovery. I am very slow, but it took me that long to actually realize how important and how necessary it was for me to really cultivate a healthy and healed relationship with myself. And so this sewing, this metaphor of mending and of sewing and making amends to ourselves through recovery, for me, is part of that process of actually radically befriending myself, as Pema, to use Pema's phrase. And so often we're advised, certainly in AA, but I suspect that this is true in OA and FA and other programs, to make sure that we're including ourselves when we are doing that fourth step and that eighth step. But I think that that's, it takes more than one round. It takes more than one sitting down with myself and making amends. It was many years in the coming in terms of making the process was in terms of actually coming to some sense of true authenticity. Both of understanding what I needed to do as well as realizing how to do it. So we've talked about recognizing, we've talked about feeling a sense, feeling the experience, particularly if it is one of regret or remorse, and then taking remedial action. And then the fourth piece is really, and this is just one paradigm, one model of self-forgiveness, is making a commitment. To try and break the cycle, to try and break the habit energy. And something that, comes that is as subtle and as persistent as that inner voice that does tend to be very self-critical, relentlessly so, judgmental, can really, really take a long time in terms of breaking that cycle. And for me, it really did, require making that commitment to tune in to the way that Cynthia was talking to Cynthia. And then to actively start to use different language in order to change the conversation that Cynthia was having with Cynthia. So instead of, "Oh, you stupid jerk, how could you do something so foolish, so ridiculous? Oh my God, what an embarrassment," that I could change that language to be, "You, that was an uncomfortable moment. You perhaps didn't do that as well as you would like to, but you made a good start. You made your best effort. You are trying as hard as you can to really try and, you know, put the shoulder into that stream of negativism and to actively turn it around to introduce positivity. And for me, it really took that type of talking back to myself and learning how to talk to myself in a kind way to set the stage for forgiving myself. So there's another way of that I found that this was summed up more from a therapeutic perspective, but taking responsibility, feeling remorse, bringing about restoration, and then renewal, which is this spirit that I love, that is available to us in our recovery programs, and is certainly implicit, deeply embedded into Buddhist practice, which is, you know, this perseverating that we do about how we behaved or how we're going to behave, you know, is really not invited to the table of Buddhist practice. We tend to do it, but it seems perceived as something that is wholly unnecessary and a hindrance to us, that each moment in our lives is just totally fresh, right? I'm the one, though, that has to work on releasing myself from the notion that I have to beat myself up over and over again for past moments, or prepare myself and contort myself into a certain way to be ready for future moments, right? But in Buddhism, the invitation is that I'm just here. And if I have done something unskillful, whether to myself or to somebody else, I take responsibility for it. And that's it. I move on with my intention and my effort to do something differently, to do it differently the next time. We have a saying in Buddhist practice, 300,000 strikes to hit the mark, which is extraordinarily generous, more generous than I have ever been to myself, that it takes that much effort in order to kind of get close to the mark or to actually hit the mark. And I don't know about you, but I have this expectation of myself that I should do it perfectly the first time, that I should know how to do something perfectly the first time, even if I've never done it before. Where these ideas come from, who knows? We'll let Janine and other therapists address that. But nonetheless, I'm sure that I'm not alone here in having this notion, right? That somehow I should know how to do something. So ungenerous with ourselves many times. So this last part about making a commitment to break the cycle is a really important piece of both recovery and of practice, because otherwise all of this is just living in our heads above the eyebrows, which is where I lived before I came into practice and recovery for, you know, 3 decades. And it really, both of these programs are about helping us to embody this different way of living. That hopefully will bring about greater peace and ease and relief and the transformation of suffering for all of us. But it doesn't happen by thinking ourselves into it. Awareness is very helpful, but we have to underscore it with our actions. In the big book, it talks about faith without works is dead, right? Our program, our spirituality, our desires to bring about change without action are dead. Nothing changes if nothing changes. If I just stay living in my head, as I did for many years of my active addiction, hoping that I would change, well, no change came about. I actually had to get myself, my heart, mind, and body to a AA meeting, into therapy. I had to bring myself to a practice center and actually sit on a cushion and work with a teacher, right? So we actually have to take action. I want to say that Something that I find extremely helpful in this realm of self-forgiveness from a Buddhist perspective is that we are extremely not only generous in terms of how many strikes it takes to hit the mark, but it's almost implicit in the practice that it's one mistake after another. In fact, the founder of our particular lineage that comes out of Suzuki Roshi, who is Dogen from medieval Japan, he talks about, you know, it's one mistake after another. And that I find, as a person who is a recovering perfectionist, I find that really, really helpful. You know, I tend to keep myself on this narrow tunneled path. But if it's one mistake after another, I don't have to be perfect. I can just do my best with myself and with others. And if I make a mistake, well, then in Buddhism, there's no sin. It's not having come from the, it's not like the religion that I came from of my youth, where I had to go into a dark closet with some stranger and confess and, you know, say bazillion Hail Marys or something like that and just feel put on my hair shirt. But it's simply a mistake. It's not a sin. It's like I just made a mistake, which is such a more generous way of inviting me and all of us to just feel our humanity and just sink into just being humans, right? And particularly, as I said, as a recovering perfectionist, I find that so, so useful, right? And I think that's why, in terms of the situation that I started off telling you about back in New York a week ago, that I actually, you know, I've been into action and I feel like I can let myself off the hook for that. I can see what I did. I have the resolve, having felt all of it, to try to not do something like that again. But that only took a week of my life, where prior to recovery and practice, I would be riding this thing for a couple of years. What a great gift that is. What a great gift that is, to be kinder and more compassionate and more generous with ourselves. So this notion from a Buddhist perspective that there isn't any sin is really, really helpful when we think about this whole process of self-forgiveness, that it's all just neutral. You know, we all have inherent in us the seeds, the opportunity to wake up to our true self, the self that's bigger than the little petty Cynthia, the contorted, twisted Cynthia that was roaming the earth for several decades. And that is, I don't have to judge her as wrong. I can just judge her as ignorant, in the most neutral sense of the word ignorant. Ignorant to what was going on with her, ignorant to the forces that had shaped her, ignorant to how to find the solution to, having not found the solution, how to behave. And then fortunately, finding recovery and practice, oh, the great gift of being able to come into awareness and awakening about these things. So that wonderful sense of neutrality, if we can all with ourselves, and then if I can do it with myself, amazingly enough, big surprise, once I became more forgiving of myself, I was able to be so much more forgiving of others. Shock, I know. But this notion of, oh, there I go. I made a mistake. I made a mistake, right? So we have in Buddhist practice, what we do in all of our various vow-taking ceremonies, what certain larger practice centers do on the occasion of the new moon every month, on other occasions, we recite what's called the Atonement Gatha, which basically says, all my ancient twisted karma, all of the ways that I haven't understood myself, right? All my ancient twisted karma, from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion, the ways that our hurt and our wounds manifest in our lives, all my ancient twisted karma from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion, born through body, speech, and mind, either the things that I think that are so unkind about myself or others, the way that I talk about myself or others that are unkind, or the actions that I take that are unskillful and harmful, I now fully avow. That's it. I take responsibility for it. That's all I have to do. And when I have that level of awareness and that much of a commitment to taking responsibility for it, then I'm able to get out of the cycle of negativity, of criticism toward myself and harm toward myself or others much, much more quickly. And so then all of this, coupled with this notion that I mentioned just a moment ago, that every moment is fresh. You know, the past is gone. We're already different than how we started this meeting. We'll be different in another few seconds. Every moment is just its own unique, discrete moment of life and opportunity to be, to live fully. That type of freshness, to begin anew. You know, it's what we say in recovery, you know, it's not never too late to start your day over again, is kind of in the same sphere as this, that we don't have to be held back or to hold on to all these ways that we are harsh with ourselves or others, unforgiving with ourselves or others, judgmental, critical. We can just begin every moment like every breath. It's fresh, it's new every moment. And it brings to mind, and the last thing that I want to say is that this couples with, in Buddhism, one of the 10 clear-minded precepts, the first one, which, and these precepts are not commandments, but they're really kind of guardrails, things to investigate in, which is that a disciple of the Buddha doesn't kill, but affirms life, or a disciple of the Buddha doesn't kill but cherishes life. And I think that there's a very big tie-in with all of this self-forgiveness or the reticence or the inability to forgive ourselves that for me changed dramatically and opened up when I realized how part of not forgiving myself was actually engaging in killing myself. I wasn't giving myself a chance. I wasn't affirming the precious life that I have. I wasn't taking good care of it by always being stuck in negativity and self-criticism and, you know, all the other darkness that comes with this lack of generosity to self. That when we take life seriously, as Buddhism invites us to do, as I think our programs of recovery invite us to do, to say, learn how to say yes to life in a wholesome, upright, skillful way through the steps. When we do this through a recovery or through a Buddhist perspective, that we really are saying, I am part of life. No, not above, not below, but I am part of life. And if I'm going to take life seriously, I have to take the life seriously that I've been given. I have to take my life seriously, not in an aggrandized way, not in a hubristic way, of course, but in a way that's very clear, very level, very even, very equal, and very wholehearted. And so all of the, looking at all of the things, self-forgiveness being just one aspect of it, it is part of my opportunity to affirm life, to really enter into this realm, to take care of myself when I am harming myself by not being forgiving of myself, when I'm harming myself by not being, by being too critical. Dogen has a way of saying, please treasure yourselves, which I think is so sweet. What a wonderful exhortation. Please treasure your precious selves. So let me close by reading a poem that I think is a nice counterpart to running into the new year. This is by Derek Wolcott. love after love. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, "Sit here, eat." You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit. Feast on your life. Let us all begin anew. Thank you. Let me stop this recording.